TED Audio Collective.
This TED Talk features design ambassador John Kerry, recorded live at TED Women 2017.
This show is brought to you by Schwab. You're here to keep a pulse on environmental trends. Well, now you can invest in what's trending in electric vehicles, renewable energy, water sustainability, and more with Schwab Investing Themes. It's an easy way to invest in ideas you believe in. Schwab's research uncovers emerging trends, then their technology curates relevant stocks into themes. Choose from over 40 themes. Buy all the stocks in a theme as is or customize to better fit your investing goals. All in a few clicks. Schwab Investing Themes is not intended to be investment advice or a recommendation of any stock or investment strategy. Learn more at schwab.com/thematic investing. Support for TED Talks Daily is from Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You can say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On a beautiful day, just a few years ago, my wife and I entered a hospital near our home in Oakland, California, for the birth of our first daughter, Maya. We had responsibly toured the birthing center in advance, and yet we were somehow still startled to find ourselves in the place where we would experience one of the most significant moments of our lives. We were stuck in a windowless room with no hint of the bright and sunny day that we had left. Fluorescent lights buzzed overhead. Paint on the walls was beige, and machines beeped inexplicably as a wall clock indicated day turning to night. That clock was placed above a door in direct line of sight to where my wife lay as her contractions increased hour after hour. Now, I've never given birth, but she assured me that the last thing that a birthing woman would ever want is to watch the seconds tick by. An architect by training, I've always been fascinated watching people experience design in the world around them. I believe design functions like the soundtrack that we're not even fully aware is playing. It sends us subconscious messages about how to feel and what to expect. That room that we were in seemed completely misaligned with the moment that we were experiencing, welcoming a human being, our daughter, into this world. At one point, a nurse, without any prompt, turned to us and said, "I always think to myself, I wish I had become an architect because I could have designed rooms like this better." I said to her, "An architect did design this room." Despite the immense joy of our daughter's birth, the messages of that hospital room stick with she and I to this day. Those messages are, you are not at home. You are in a foreign place. You are not in control of anything, not even the lighting. Your comfort simply is secondary. At best, a hospital room like this might just be described or dismissed as uninspiring. At worst, it is undignifying. And I use it to point out that none of us, anywhere in the world, are immune from bad design. I went into architecture because I believed it was about creating spaces for people to live their best lives. And yet what I found is a profession largely disconnected from the people most directly impacted by its work. I believe this is because architecture remains a white, male, elitist profession, seemingly unconcerned with some of the greatest needs in the world, or even the relatively simple needs of an expectant mother. Students are trained in school using highly theoretical projects, rarely interacting with real people or actual communities. Graduates are funneled through a long, narrow, unforgiving path to licensure. Meanwhile, the profession holds up a select few through relentless award programs, focus almost exclusively on the aesthetics of buildings rather than the societal impact or contributions of them. It only goes to reinforce a warped view of professional responsibility and success, and yet this isn't why so many young, hopeful people go into architecture. It's not why I did. I believed then, though I didn't have the language for it, and I know now that design has unique ability to dignify. It can make people feel valued, respected, honored, and seen. Now, I'd like for you to just think about some of the spaces that you inhabit. And I'd like to have you think about how they make you feel. Now, there are places that make us feel unhappy, unhealthy, or uninspiring. They may be the places that you work, or where you heal, or even where you live. And I ask, how might these places be better designed with you in mind? It's a really simple question, and it can sometimes be very difficult to answer, because we are conditioned to feel like we don't have much agency over the spaces and places that we live, work, and play. And in many cases, we don't, but we all should. Now, here's a potentially dumb question for any women watching. Have you ever stood in a disproportionately long bathroom line? Did you ever think to yourself, what is wrong with this picture? Well, what if the real question is, what is wrong with the men that designed these bathrooms? It may seem like a small thing, but it's representative of a much more serious issue. The contemporary world was literally built by men who have rarely taken the time to understand how people unlike them experience their designs. A long bathroom line might seem like a minor indignity, but the opposite can also be true. Thoughtful design can make people feel respected and seen. I've come to believe that dignity is to design what justice is to law and health is to medicine. In the simplest of terms, it's about having the spaces you inhabit reflect back your value. Over the past 2 years, I had the opportunity to interview over 100 people from all walks of life about their experience of design. I wanted to test my hunch that dignity and design are uniquely related. I listened to Gregory, a resident of this cottage community designed specifically for the 50 most chronically homeless people in Dallas. Gregory had been living on the streets, drifting from town to town for over 30 years. A broad coalition of social service agencies, funders, and designers created this place. Each 400 square foot cottage is designed beautifully as a permanent home. Gregory now has a key to a door to his own house. He describes a sense of security that it brings him, something he had lived without for 3 decades. When he arrived with little more than the clothes on his back, he found everything from a toaster, crock pot, and stove to a toothbrush and toothpaste awaiting for him. He describes it simply as heaven. On the other side of the world, I listened to Antoinette, the director of this training and community center for women in rural Rwanda. Hundreds of women come to this place daily to learn new skills, be in community, and continue rebuilding their lives following the country's civil war. These women literally pressed the 500,000 bricks that make up the 17 classroom pavilions like this one. Antoinette told me, everyone is so proud of it. And then back here in the U.S., I listened to Monica, the director of a free clinic, primarily serving the uninsured in Arkansas. Monica loves telling me that the doctors who volunteer at her free clinic routinely tell her that they've never worked in such a beautiful, light-filled place. Monica believes that even people experiencing poverty deserve quality health care. And what's more, she believes they deserve to receive that care in a dignified setting. People like these are invaluable ambassadors for design, and yet they are roundly absent from architectural discourse. Similarly, the people who can most benefit from good design often have the least access to it. Your cousin, a homeless veteran, your grandma or grandpa who live in a house with a kitchen that's no longer accessible to them, your wheelchair-bound sister in a suburban area planned without sidewalks. If good design is only for a privileged few, what good is it? It's time designers change this by dedicating their practices to the public good in the model of firms like Orchid Studio, Studio Gang, and Mass Design Group. Their clients are orphan children in Kenya, foster children in Chicago, and pregnant women in Malawi. Their practices are premised on the belief that everyone deserves good design. Dedicating more practices to the public good will not only create more design that is dignifying, but it will also dignify the practice of design. It will not only diversify the client base of design, but it will also create new, more diverse forms of design for the world. Now, in order to do this, my architecture and design friends, especially my fellow white guys, we must simultaneously and significantly diversify our ranks if we want the public to believe that design is for them and for everyone. Today, barely 15% of registered architects in the United States are women, and a far smaller percentage are persons of color. Other professions like law and medicine have made far greater strides in these crucial areas. How might our shared built environment, our homes, our hospitals, our schools, our public spaces be shaped differently if women and people of color were behind half of the proverbial blueprints? It is not a question of whether, but to what extent our buildings, our landscapes, our cities, and our rural communities are less beautiful, less functional, less equitable, and less dignifying because women and people of color are less likely to be creating them. As Winston Churchill famously noted in 1943 when he called for the rebuilding of London's war-damaged parliamentary chambers, we shape our buildings, and afterward, they shape us. The good news is that we can change how we build and who we build for, be that a health worker in rural Rwanda, or a birthing mother and nervous new father in the United States. We can do this by recommitting architecture to the health, safety, and welfare of the public. This will pay dividends, because once you see what design can do, you can't unsee it. And once you experience dignity, you can't accept anything less. Both become part of your possible. One of my favorite conversation partners is my 90-year-old grandmother, Audrey Gorwitz, from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. After one of our conversations about design, she wrote me a letter. She said, "Dear Johnny, I thought the other day as I sat in my doctor's office how depressing it was from the color on the wall to the carpet on the floor. Now I will have to call to see who is responsible for the drabness in that place." In the same letter, mind you, she said, "I did call, and I got the man in charge, and he said he appreciated someone calling him. My doctor's office is now on the list for an upgrade." She signed it by saying, "It is always good to express one's opinion if done in the proper manner." I love my grandma. Like my grandma Audrey, you deserve good design. Because well-designed spaces are not just a matter of taste or a question of aesthetics. They literally shape our ideas about who we are in the world and what we deserve. That is the essence of dignity, and both the opportunity and the responsibility of design, for good and for all. Thank you.
For more TED Talks, go to TED.com.